everyone. Welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week just breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen are just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And we've been raising a lot of awareness on speech and language on the show, especially now with everything going on and having so much time at home with your kids, really the things that you should be looking for and reinforcing, and I'm excited to be having today's guest here. Lori Kaplan Cologne is one of the nation's leading speech-language pathologists specializing in pediatric feeding disorders with American Speech and Hearing Association certification, over 18 years of clinical experience, and an extensive background in areas of oral motor and feeding dysfunction. She's the founder of Montclair Speech Therapy, a family-friendly practice that provides service for infants, children, adults, and seniors. MST's mission is to provide inclusive, research-based therapies that serve unique needs of individuals with creativity, support, applied learning skills, and skill through therapy. So with all that being said, Lori, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, Dori.
It's a pleasure having you. So I want to dive right in and let's talk about what speech and feeding therapy is and why would it be important?
Sure. So that is a two-part question. You know, I say speech is anybody, an individual's ability to understand and produce language and the ability to get their messages across clearly across different environments with different people and to experience success with that. And then feeding is the same structures, different function, right? And the way we think about feeding is it's a multi-sensory experience that each person is coming to the table and having to adjust to different experiences and input and the ability to take in food and safely and effectively and efficiently to support their nutrition and hydration.
How do you pay attention as a parent to, let's go with the feeding first and the things that you should be looking for?
Okay, yes. In our office, I'm seeing infants just learning to latch and learning to really coordinate their suck, swallow, breathe synchrony. And if that is challenging for an infant, they're not going to meet their nutritional needs and grow appropriately. And, you know, in the very beginning, you're going to doctor's appointments and your baby is getting measured and you'll find, you know, where your baby is on the growth curve. And oftentimes when babies are dropping off their curve or if they start at one percentile and it starts to drop, it becomes alarming for, you know, physicians and of course to, you know, to the parents and the family members. So it's easier at the earlier age to really determine when maybe an infant or a baby is having difficulty because of these really routine visits. What isn't as easy is when, you know, you're transitioning to solids and those appointments are, you know, further apart and you have a baby who is just maybe rejecting foods and having difficulty and toddlers who are, you know, avoiding full food groups and running away from the table and having big behaviors in response to meals and snacks and the family, what they're oftentimes families are really giving the child what it is that they want to make it, you know, mealtimes less stressful. And so oftentimes I see these kids coming in who are, you know, eating just one color food or if they're really avoiding a lot of different food groups. So the signs to look for are really restrictive eating or big meltdowns or, you know, prolonged mealtimes, things like that.
I actually had a friend whose son only ate beige food.
Wow. Yeah. And I see that.
Yeah. And it was like this kid absolutely refused to eat anything else. How do you work around something like that?
I can imagine that was really stressful for your friend, right? So the way we work around it is we really have to recognize what the child is coming to the table with. And it's not just looking at what their mouth is doing. It's looking at like how are they reacting to the different sounds of the food, the smell of the food, the way the food feels in their mouth, the way it feels in their hands. We're also thinking about any past negative experiences, any like what did other foods, how did it make them feel? If they learned at a very young age that if we're giving them milk and they have an allergy to milk, they learn pretty quickly that this doesn't make me feel good. So there's reasons why children will restrict, and it's rarely ever, it's a behavior. Their behaviors come secondary to difficulties that the child is experiencing. So the way I like to think about it is, if a child is only eating beige foods, we really want to figure out, okay, task analyze why, and then we're going to start to food chain. So if we have beige bread and it's the shape of a square, maybe we can start to look at the way that, okay, the bread is beige and it's square, it's soft, and we start to talk about the different physical attributes and qualities and experience of that food that the child does know and feels safe around, and we want to chain to other foods by just, if we look at, like, say, cheese, right, that's also square, and, you know, it has four sides, and it's soft, and if they're the same temperature and things like that. So we want to really chain the foods that they know and that they feel safe with, and start to teach them about other foods, and not in a way where we expect them, hey, this is also square, put it in your mouth and eat it. That's not how we do it. We really have to recognize that this is challenging for the child, and even just being in the same room with that cheese can be a really big deal. And so if the child is sitting, we're going to celebrate that the kid or the whomever can sit with that cheese, say, a foot away from them. Then maybe in the next week's session, the cheese will be, you know, at 6 inches or something. And we really think about feeding as a 32-step hierarchy, where a child works through all the different sensory systems, and we have a lot of fun, and we start to really learn about foods. And the research shows that the more a child is exposed to different foods, the more likely they're going to take their first bites. And that's really, we want to recognize, number one, it's challenging for the kid. Why is it challenging? And how can we make this really fun and really break it down into bite-sized manageable pieces and get the child progressing and celebrating as they, you know, learn about new foods.
You know, amazing. I got lucky. My kids didn't know anything. And I have a grandson who's a little over 2, and he's the same way. And it's so funny because he's one of those, you put food in his mouth and he's like,
So oh, that's great.
It just, that's got to be such a challenge. And, you know, as a parent, how do you work with parents to help them?
It is very challenging. And I think that's a lot of what I love about what I do. It's not just getting to work with the kids or the babies. It's really about working with the family, regardless if the family is present, all the past experiences and all the methodologies, you know, that is what the child is bringing to the table. And so it's really important that when we're doing our food school or feeding therapy, that we involve the family. And so in our office before COVID, when I do the evaluation, the families come in and we see how the child is responding with the family. And then what we did when we were doing our therapy sessions in the office, we would have our families sit out in the waiting room and watch and listen on the tablet that we would provide, so that they can be a part of the therapeutic experience without the child relying on the family or you know, doing whatever the things that were not serving them with the family present. And slowly over time, we would welcome the families in, and we'd start bringing, you know, mom or dad, and they would just sit in the room and pretend to read a book or look through the phone. And so the child got used to their family being present but not being a part of, and slowly inching them closer. And then ultimately at discharge, I would just sit back and have the family just run the session, right? So it's always, you know, a system, and we have homework every week or every day, and the family learns the language and the way we do things, and we give them all the literature and things like that so that they can really understand it and offer them whatever support. So a lot of hand-holding and a lot of encouragement we offer it to the families, because it is so challenging for a lot of these parents to have really, really picky eaters. It's you know, they really struggle. And when there's a weight issue, the families, you can tell how meaningful and devastating it is to them sometimes.
Why is that such an issue and so devastating?
I have 2 kids, and they're good eaters at this point. But I remember when I gave birth to my daughter 11 years ago, you know, my daughter wasn't getting enough, you know, by day 5 of life. I was nursing, and I remember, you know, it was a little bit of a struggle with the latching and, you know, extracting and all the things it was so much stress. And so I knew that when I went to the doctor, they were weighing her. And so I felt like I was failing, right? They told me, if she doesn't, you know, gain X amount of ounces, we're going to put a feeding tube in her. And I was like devastated. I really felt that it was like something that I was doing wrong. And so I recognize that every time that, you know, I have parents coming, and a lot of it's the moms that are coming to the sessions, right? Not always, but this amazing amount of guilt you feel when your child may not be on, you know, meeting their weight or growth milestones, because it feels like you're failing to mom or to parent when the doctors or whomever is saying that their child isn't growing. And of course, there's growth curves and there's a reason for it. But what we really, really focus on in our sessions and is about the quality of mealtimes versus like quantity and like kind of reducing that expectation that my child has to eat, you know, X amount, of course, for growth. And there's registered dietitians who are going to really help with, you know, meal planning and things like that. But for us, it's really, it has to be quality driven. And of course, we want our kids to have a variety of healthy foods and from all different food groups. But we really want to recognize that this is hard and we're going to help them and they're going to gain all these new foods, but it can't be in a way that's received negatively. So we try and take away those factors that feel so stressful.
How do you help your children create that positive relationship with food?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a whole lot of play, a lot of food fights. We're pre-COVID, we were, you know, I was taking blueberries and spitting them against the wall, and like, you know, when I didn't have to wear a mask, and you know, over the screen, it's different when we have our virtual sessions. But I mean, it's really reducing that anxiety around new foods, and then slowly, you know, progressing in underwhelming volumes and ways so that the child can learn, oh, okay, so this is, I've never had a blueberry, I'm going to put it on my teeth and I'm going to feel like its size. I'm going to feel its temperature and maybe I'm going to squish it with my teeth. And if I don't like it, I can spit it out, right? And we work through all of the things that make it challenging, including whatever medically is going on, whatever from a sensory standpoint, from an oral motor. And then we do have to recognize that there may be behaviors and these behaviors have served the child for a while. So over time, once we get a real handle on the kids, we start to, once we know that can do it, we will start to, when needed, address those behaviors as behaviors. And that's when we'll do more of like a when-then approach, and we're playing and we're celebrating. And when they, you know, take their next bite, then we're throwing the next blueberry in the bucket or getting our next whatever it is. So we gain their trust. We have a lot of fun. And, you know, there are some rules, but we first always gain the child's trust and have a whole lot of fun. And it's just so incredible to be part of the journey where kids are just gaining new foods and learning, hey, this is good. This is what I like about it, this is what I don't like about it, this is how I can change it, I can use these spices, these condiments, or I can put it in the microwave, right? So there's so many, it's just so amazing that we can, you know, teach these kids how to be little food detectives and explore food in ways and make them better to whatever they like, right? And we do it in really fun ways, and we talk about not necessarily healthy foods or, like, you know, good foods, bad foods. It's just, oh, this is an orange food, this is a square food, this is a, you know, green food. But, and we try and reduce the notion of, like, this is healthy, this is unhealthy.
On that note, Lori, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to say thank you to our sponsors. We will be right back here on Word of Mom Radio in just a moment.
We all know a survivor. Some of our friends and family have made it through difficult times. Some of us don't make it. Losing a loved one to cancer, a car accident, or any other unfortunate event can be crippling and unavoidable. But one of the hardest subjects to talk about is suicide. Too often, our youth decide that leaving this place is easier than facing the struggle forced upon them every day. More than one in four children go through some form of bullying or another. Most of us survive with scars, but for some, the inner demons created cannot be recognized or treated in time to ensure they make it through. Bullying in every form is very much avoidable. It starts with me, and it starts with you. This is Kelly Carius from No Such Thing as a Bully, reminding you to do your part when you see bullying happen. If you don't know what that is, call 403-447-4404 or go to nosuchthingasabully.com.
From the beach to a ball game, from your office to a locker, StadiumBags.com has the clear bags for you. Don't let our name fool you. We are not just for sports fans. The great thing about our bags is, yes, they meet the size requirements for pro and college sports. More importantly, they have the quality, versatility, and style that will stand up to years of use. You can feel free to clean your bags with the solvents that are going to keep the germs away from your home and your personal belongings and still make safety and convenience coexist. So find us at StadiumBags.com. You'll see why we are your clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag.
And we are back here on Word of Mom Radio with Lori Kaplan Cologne from Montclair Speech Therapy. And I love that you're teaching kids to be food detectives. I just think that's so fabulous, because I think when kids get more involved in their food and helping prepare their food and things like that, it gets them excited about coming to the table to eat. And,
absolutely.
You know, people go back and forth with using food as a reward, not using food as a reward. In your professional opinion, what are we supposed to be doing?
Sure. So that is a challenging question, because a lot of, in the perfect world, we are not using food as reward. You know, I do recognize when there is a time that food as reward is needed, and we can talk about that. But as, you know, like I was saying before, we don't want to put value on any kind of food. We don't want to say something like, eat all of these, like, quote, yucky green vegetables, and then you're going to get a yummy chocolate snack, right? We want our kids and our adults to be able to recognize that food is food, and we don't want our kids to eat all of their foods or adults and so that they can get to their dessert, right? So that places an unhealthy relationship on, you know, other foods. I do see that, you know, a lot of, you know, up to 80% of children who are on the autism spectrum, they get identified as having a feeding disorder, and oftentimes in, you know, the type of therapies they do, that applied behavioral analysis, oftentimes we really need to find what is motivating. And if it's M&Ms, you know, these ABA therapists are using M&Ms and they're rewarding them because they really need to find out, you know, we need to get this kid doing XYZ. So they're doing these rewards with foods. And I do understand that that is something that is needed to get some, you know, of these skills developed. So I see a place for it if, you know, if we can avoid it versus with, you know, when a kid, if a child is, you know, against or doesn't really love or is not friends with their broccoli or their carrots, we don't want to necessarily say, oh yeah, you did that, let's get a, you know, let's get some ice cream. We might just want to, you know, validate what they did, not saying, hey, great job biting that broccoli. We might just, you know, give them a little extra attention at the table and say, you know what I was thinking, you know, when they take that bite, they have it in their mouth, they're chewing. I was thinking, you know, after dinner, we're going to walk to the park, and, you know, I was, you know, I saw that great big slide. I'd love to go down that, right? So you're giving them attention in a way that doesn't just say, hey, you're chewing, you know, the broccoli. You're just giving them additional attention, and it's not necessarily, you're not saying, way to go, great chewing that, you know, broccoli or something like that.
Okay. I want to go into the speech side of what you do at Montclair Speech Therapy, and how important that aspect of your work is.
We have a lot of therapists in the office that are working on speech and language, and you know, for a kid, you know, we just want our, you know, and we have birth through end of life, so there are so many reasons why somebody would be coming to see us. But for, you know, for a lot of this is geared to the moms, right? So what, you know, we want our kids to be able to understand the language that we're giving them. We want them to be able to produce language so that they have the confidence so that they can, you know, develop meaningful peer relationships and let, you know, say what it is that they want and, you know, express themselves. And if a child is having trouble with this because of, you know, whatever, the muscles in their mouth are not strong enough, or if they have some processing difficulties, or maybe it's just environmentally they haven't been exposed or whatever it is, it, you know, what we're going to see is that if a child is not where they should be for their age in comparison to their peers, you're going to see behaviors that are going to exist, right? So when a child can't get their message across, we're going to hear that, you know, a child is, you know, maybe hitting or throwing, or, and then you get the complaints from the daycares when daycares were open, right, in schools. So a lot of times these language delays are picked up in the schools, right, because they're not performing like their peers, and then they don't have the language to say, hey, I want that toy. So they're, you know, maybe doing things that isn't age appropriate or appropriate for, you know, developing, you know, relationships with their friends. So it's so important to be able to, for a kid to have the language so they feel confident and successful in their environment.
While we are geared towards mom, there are so many, let's face it, families now that are dealing with young children and older parents. So how are you helping in that vein as well? Because it's a very important part of your work.
Some of our therapists really are more, you know, specialized in working with, you know, the adolescent population and adults and even geriatric. So again, you know, we see clients coming in due to like a host of different, you know, diagnoses, you know, strokes or traumatic brain injuries or degenerative diseases and things like that. So at that, you know, we as a, you know, for a person who has been communicating their entire life and they have been successful and, you know, at the end or in the midlife, right, they lose this, it is devastating. So helping them to find their voices and to find ways to be able to continue to have meaningful relationships and communicate what it is they're feeling and what they need is a big part of what we do as well. And supporting the family in that also, because we do see that, you know, this it can be devastating for the individual, but how it impacts the family when it's your mother, your sister, or your father or grandfather who's struggling to do things they once did, it's really challenging. So we want to be there for these families as well and coach them and celebrate and do all of the things so that we can get these people back to the best that we can get them to. And we really believe that there's no limit. So we'll keep on working to establish whatever system we can for these individuals.
Going back to mom and their kids, what kind of techniques and activities and things can you do at home to be fostering your speech and language development in your child?
Yeah, so, you know, talking a lot, talking so much that your voice and your throat is almost hurting at the end of the day. You want to really, you know, narrate what it is that you're doing. Mommy is, you know, mommy is doing her hair, or mommy is, you know, about to put these books away. Oh, I'm going to put this in the, right, really, really talking a lot throughout the day and talking to your kids, reading books. It is so beneficial. Doing, you know, little structured tasks throughout the day, really starting to develop play skills, depending on the age, of course, but talking to your kids, you know, even getting in the kitchen, cooking with your kids, everything you do with your kids is an opportunity for learning. So it can be going for a walk, in the bath, eating dinner, cooking dinner, going food shopping. There is language all around. And the more words that a kid hears, right, the research shows, there's this book, I think it was called 40 million words or something, but it was saying that children who hear more words, there are these studies that show that these kids do better on, you know, tests down the road, and it translates over into, based on how many millions of words a kid hears in those, I think it's like birth to 5 years, that translates into better test scores down the road, even up through like high school, the SATs and those things. The number of words a kid hears, right, is a predictor of later success. So talking to your kids, reading to your kids, and listening to your kids is a really great way to engage and to help your child learn language.
I love that. I talk with my grandchild all the time. My kids, I mean, life is a learning lesson. I can remember one time we were walking down the street and three trucks went by. I couldn't believe it. No joke. There was a small white truck, a medium blue truck, and a big red truck all in a row. Yeah. We got colors. We got shape. We got sizes. We had math. It was so much fun just walking down the street, learning something new.
Yeah.
What a wonderful thing that talking to your children. Imagine that. Just talking to your children makes
true.
A difference.
And it's funny how that it's not something that is, you know, intuitive. So that here we are teaching our families, yes, we're going to talk to our kids, right? And it's just so powerful. And seeing that, like, oh, like with the families, you know, it's like this, oh, I'm supposed to, you know, talk to them, right? It's not something that just comes naturally to some people. For me, before, you know, getting into the field and having kids, I may not have known that. So it's so great to be able to, like, educate and coach our families and then be a witness to the amazing growth.
As we are wrapping up, Lori, please let everyone know how they can get in touch with you.
Our website is montclairspeechtherapy.com. You can, you know, send me an email. I am really responsive. It's just Lori@montclairspeechtherapy.com. We have a Facebook page. It's, you know, we're on Facebook as Montclair Speech Therapy. And again, I don't know how to do social media, so I don't know my Instagram. I really don't. But I believe it's Montclair Speech Therapy. I don't know what, even if you call it a handle, but some of my therapists who are more savvy handle that.
Teamwork works. It really does. What would you like to leave our listeners with, Lori?
I think that if you have any concerns with your child's feeding or speech, language, sensory issues, I think you need to really trust your parent gut and, bring it up to your pediatrician, do your own research and find support so that, your child is not having difficulties in any of these areas. And it's always good to intervene early if there is anything so that we can get them caught up. So trust your gut. If you think there's something going on, it's worth getting someone, a professional, to take a look.
Awesome advice. Thank you so much for being here with us. For all of you tuning in, thank you for spending time with us here on Word of Mom Radio. We're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So until next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is-